Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Bear, minister of the 12th hour apostolic. We're going to, today is June the 9th, 2025, or it is the 15th day of Sivan, 2029. We're going to continue with track number 12, title Daniel 11, the summary of it. And and now will I show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than they all. And by his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Grisha, and a mighty king shall stand up that shall rule with a great dominion and do according unto his will. And when he shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken and shall be divided toward the four winds of the heaven, and not to his posterity, nor according unto his dominion which he ruled. For his kingdom shall be puffed up even for the others beside those. Daniel 11, 2 to 4. Here it is from these verses that the Medo-Persian Empire was to be subdued by the mighty king of Grecia, Alexander. Here it is that these verses that the Medo-Persian Empire was to be subdued by the mighty king of Grecia, Alexander the Great, and subsequently be divided into four parts, to the south, to the north, to the east, and to the west. But that even for the others, thus it was that after Alexander's dream, the empire was split up. So after Alexander's death, the empire was split up, and one part assigned unto each of the four generals who formed the league. First, Ptolemy assumed the regal power in Egypt. Second, Seleucus in Syria and Upper Asia. Third, Lamassus in Thrace and Asia Minor, as far as Taurus. And fourth, Cassander took as his share in Macedonia. Universal History, page 100. It is well to remember that aside from the stating of the geographic locations of the four Grecian divisions, the prophetic record of the entire chain of the event is devoted to the king of the south and to the king of the north. The acts of the king of the north, however, are especially emphasized, showing that the whole prophetic account is given particularly to expose his meddling with the holy thing. Hence follows an enumeration of some of the identifying acts of the king of the north. Number one, he defeats the king of the south and takes his kingdom, Daniel 11, 15, 16, after which he stands in the glorious land, Daniel 11, 16, Palestine. That's the glorious land, in other words, the land of Israel. Number two, in the glory of the kingdom, a razor of the taxes stands up. at Daniel 11:20. Track 3, or number 2. His kingdom is overflown with the arms of flesh from before him. At Daniel 11:22. And he loses Egypt and Palestine. Number 4. After it, he works his secretly and becomes strong with a small people. Daniel 11:23. He flatters the wicked ones for their wickedness. Daniel 11:32. Number 6. He divides the lands again. Daniel 11:39. Number 7. He becomes strong a second time, yet is defeated by the king of the south, Daniel 11:25, 29:30. And he becomes strong a second time. Okay, so number 7, he becomes strong a second time, yet is defeated by the king of the south, Daniel 11:25, 29:30. Number 8, both kings speak lies at one table, Daniel 11:27. Well, we know that was back there in the first several centuries after the cross. That was with pagan Rome. Number 9, having become strong the second time and having engaged in an unsuccessful war with the king of the south, he sets his heart against the holy covenant, Daniel 11:28. Number 10, he pollutes the sanctuary of the strength and takes away the bed, Daniel 11:31. He forsakes the God, this is number 11, of his fathers, Daniel 11:37. Acknowledges a strange God, Daniel 11:39, and disregards the desire of women, Daniel 11:37. So that's your Catholic Pope, okay, number 12. And the time at the end, he again defeats the king of the south, enters into the country, overflows, and passes over, Daniel 11:40. Then once more stands in the glorious land. Following this, Edom and Moab and the chief children of Ammon escape out of his hand, Daniel 11:41. And the Libyans, also the Ethiopians, follow Ariel's steps, Daniel 11:43. Number 13, tidings out of the east and out of the north trouble him. Therefore, he goes forth with great fury, destroys and utterly makes away many, Daniel 11:44. Number 14, he also plants the tabernacles of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. Yet comes to his end and none to help him. Beginning with the ancient Medo-Persian Empire, Daniel 11:2-3, the chain of the events of this prophecy reaches on to the time that the king of the north plants the tabernacles of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, Daniel 11:45, and culminates as the angel of Spain with the events of the Daniel 12. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince who standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even under that same time, and at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book Daniel 12:1, covering such a long period of the time, many centuries, the dominion of the kings whose history is chronicled in this prophecy, obviously has passed under a number of the regime, seeing that no human being has lived on and on throughout these centuries. It is obvious that the title King of the South and King of the North are applicable on the two lines of the rule of the ruler, seeing also that no government or kingdom has stood intact throughout the ages. It likewise is obvious that these two lines have undergone many supersessions of the sovereign, many regimes. For this reason, the Bible differentiates them by the lineal geographic title. It is now clear from the scriptures that the Grecian division south of the Mediterranean, that's in the north of Africa, the Ptolemies, first received the title of King of the South, whereas the division north of the Mediterranean, living the Lamanians, first received the title of King of the North in relation to the territories of these two lines of the ruler. The Mediterranean, therefore, becomes the point of the compass on which they must be reckoned. In 281 B.C., Lamarcus added to his dominion the Sanders, and then in 279 B.C., Seleucus defeated Lamarcus and seized his kingdom. Whereupon the eastern, the northern, and the western division became one, while Ptolemy held his own, the southern division. For the Seleucid dynasty, therefore, ushered in the second northern regime, whereas the Ptolemic dynasty continued until to be the first seven regimes. To this point, the prophetic vision has been open to all, but from here on it has remained closed, though many have tried to open it. To open without a key, a locked door, is to break the door. Really being unbreakable, the locked door of the prophecy is impossible to open without the key. For the simple and positive way not to lose sight of the identity of these two kings is to let the pen of the prophecy trace on the map of the history the successive rulers of Egypt and Palestine. Palestine is the land of Israel. Egypt is Africa. For the titles of the kings who conquered and who lost these ancient countries are chronicled in this prophetic chapter to preserve the identity and to expose the evil intents of both the King of the South and the king of the north. Remember now, to begin with, the king of the south ruled a glorious land, Palestine. Okay, so there's Arabs and Muslims there in Egypt. They ruled by the land of Israel, which is called Palestine, along with Egypt, and the king of the north takes the glorious land twice, Daniel 11:16-41. If he takes it twice, then he must have lost it once. Consequently, both kings ruled it twice, and lost it twice, but the king of the north, the last who ruled it, rules it in the time of the end. This is where we're at today now. The time many run to and fro, and the time knowledge has increased. And it goes forward. That time marked this tribute for these transactions of the land provided to the identity of these kings. From the time of Alexander's death to our time, the angel emphatically declared that the kings to rule Palestine, together with Egypt, were to be as follows. First, the king of the south. That's your Ptolemy. That's in Egypt. Second, the king of the north. That's pagan Rome in the north, north of the Mediterranean. Third, the king of the south, Turkey. Turkey's north of the Mediterranean. And fourth, the king of the north in England. Here in the following 25 pages are the details of the prophecy correlated with the history. In the light of these foregone fundamental facts, we should now be able to rightly evaluate the unfolding of the scroll and to be intelligently match the page of the prophecy with the page of the history as we pass from time of the first northern regime, that of the Lamanians, on beyond the time of the second northern regime, and that of the victorious Seleucidae, who subjugated the Lamanians dynasty, and on to the time of the third northern regime, that of Rome, the power which overthrew the Seleucidian kingdom. And as the prophetic account was given to expose the work of the king of the north during the third regime, we are therefore led to examine the four numbered group of the prophecy. Group of the prophetic acts as pointed out on the pages 59 and 61. North defeats south, takes Egypt and Palestine. So the king of the south shall come and cast up the mount and take the most fenced city, and the arms of the south shall not withstand, neither his chosen people, neither shall there be any strength to withstand. But he that cometh against him shall do according unto his own will, and none shall stand before him, and he shall stand in the glorious land that's in Israel, called Palestine, which by his hand shall be consumed. Daniel 11:15-16. Page 65. Continue on. North defeats south, takes Egypt
And until this time, we're going to do a little backup here for a paragraph. It says, "So the King of the North shall come and cast up a mount and take the most fenced city, and the arms of the South shall not withstand, neither his chosen people, neither shall there be any strength to withstand, but he that cometh against him shall do according unto his own will, and none shall stand before him. And he shall stand, and the glorious land, Palestine, that's the same thing, the land of Israel, which by his hand shall be consumed." Daniel 11:15-16. For this scripture definitely brings us to enter the time of the third regime in the kingdom of the north, that of the pagan Rome, which completely overthrew the first regime of the kingdom of the south, and that was the Ptolemy kingdom, that of the Ptolemy dynasty, Egypt and Palestine, then passed from the hands of the king of the south, Ptolemy, into the hands of the king of the north, Rome. In the year 63 B.C., the Roman general, Pompey, marched against Jerusalem, Syria, and Syria had become a Roman thing. The battleground by the Hilae, Beleg, or the Belar, and in 31 B.C., Egypt became a Roman province. Okay. Since the power that overthrew the Ptolemaic dynasty and took Egypt and Palestine is by the angel identified as the king of the north. And since the pagan Rome was at power, it follows that the title king of the north, after passing from Lamachus, whose rule was the first northern regime, to Seleucus, whose rule was the second northern regime, fell to the Roman emperors, whose rule was the third northern regime. See map 4, page 17. With this supersession of the regimes, we are brought down to about 31 B.C., at which time Rome ruled not only the dominions of the Lamachus, Seleucus, and Ptolemy, but also the dominion of Cassander, Alexander's entire empire. And the glory of the kingdom. Number 2. Then shall stand up in his estate a razor of the tares, and the glory of the kingdom. Daniel 11:20. Augustus Caesar, as a Roman emperor, is as the one who taxed the world, and it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, everyone into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth unto Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house of the and lineage of the David, Luke 2:1-4. As this erasure of the taxes was to stand when the kingdom was in its glory, the statement implies that its glory was to wane. Number 3, overthrown by a flood, loses Egypt and Palestine, and with the arms of a flood shall they be overthrown from before him, and shall be broken, yea, also the prince of the covenant. Daniel 11:22. Here is shown the breakup of the Roman Empire at the hand of the barbarian horde, which swept down and as it fled, overflowed it. Again, number 4, again rising to power. As we continue on here, but I study, we're on World Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. And we're on page 67. And it looks like part number 4, as far as in parentheses here, a subtitle, again rising to power. The subtitle before that was overflown by a flood, loses Egypt and Palestine. That was number 3. Number 4 is again rising to power. We're on page 67. It says, and after the league made with him, he shall work deceptively, for he shall come up and shall become strong with a small people. Daniel 11:23. From this prophetic statement, we see that Rome was to rise from its ruin and humiliation and again become strong, but this time by deceit and with a small people. In this chain of the prophecy, then Rome is shown in 2 different phases, pagan and ecclesiastical. Okay. Well, pagan was at the cross, and ecclesiastical was in 476 A.D., 475 years later, became ecclesiastical Rome. Rome is shown in 2 different phases, pagan and ecclesiastical, just as it is shown by the 4th symbolical beast of the Daniel 7. Thus it was that after pagan Rome saw itself overrun and humbled to the ground, down and out, so to speak, it conceived a deceit by which to bring itself to power again. The scheme resulted in the ecclesiastical code of the Lord, the enforcement of which is carried out by the small people, the so-called Christian. It did not call for the dethroning of the king, but rather for the Christianizing them. Thus peaceably the king of the north succeeding in putting over his scheme to reign as a spiritual king of kings in the name of the Christian's God. First, it reigned over nations. Second, over kings of nations. This historical and biblical fact show that the Christianized nations under one spiritual head constitute Rome's second phase, and inspiration gave him the title of King of the North. At his throne, king and peasants alike within the false Roman boundaries of the Christianized Rome bowed down in the absolute submission and worship. So through her subtlety, she again became strong as the following paragraph of history confirmed. For the historical record of the flattery and forced Christianity, the bishops are overseers of the Christian churches, at first demeaned themselves in the mixed spirit of the founder of their religion, but at length they sought temporal power and worldly advantage, for the bishops of the great cities assumed authority over those of the surrounding countries. And Rome, Constantinople, Alexandria, Antioch, and Galicia became the seats of the ecclesiastical power, and their bishops might be said to constitute an oligarchy. Then the church, Rome, became through the Dark Ages a king of kings. Nay, more, he assumed to be in the face of the Yahweh, Universal History, page 198 and 199. At the coronation of the Solomon, Pope Leo III, after placing the crown upon his head, saluted him with the title of the Emperor of the Romans. He had quelled the barbarous nations of Europe, with the exception of the Danes or Normans, and his kingdom comprised France, Germany, Italy, and the north of Spain. From the east, Irene, the Empress of the Constantinople sought his friendship, and even the Caliph of Baghdad, the Prince Haran al-Rashid, entered into a correspondence with him and sent him the keys of the Holy Sepulchre of the Yarusha. Solomon, though a barbarian who at first could not write his name, but signed his treatise with the hilt of his sword and enforced them with his coin, had yet great sympathy with the learned men, Universal History 203. Wittgen, the most valiant and renowned of the chiefs, at length embraced Christianity and resigned his arms. But Charlemagne then obliged the Saxon people, under the penalty of death, to receive baptism. He invaded and conquered the Huns and the Scandinavians, Universal History, page 202. Charles, unable to repel the invaders, ceded unto them the province of the New Epsilon, thereafter called Normandy, and gave the Rollo his daughter in marriage. The Norman chief was, however, to do homage to Charles, kneeling and kissing the royal toe. Page 202. Alfred, king of England, granted the Danes permission to settle in Northumberland and East Anglia on the condition of their being governed by his laws and embracing Christianity. They were accordingly baptized, and the king himself stood godfather for the Guthrum, their chief. Okay, he found a pretext for the invading of the kingdom of Lombardy and the hostilities of the Desiderius against the Pope. Charlemagne crossed the great Saint Bernard from Geneva and successfully took Pavia and Verona. Normandy was soon reduced to submission, and the king made captive. Charlemagne next visited Rome, where he was received by the Pope, Adrian I, with every demonstration of the joy and hail as the deliverer of the church. He caused himself to be crowned king of the Lombardy, Universal History 201. In this subtle manner, came the king of the north and obtained their kingdom by the flattery, Daniel 11:21, and by the honoring of the God of the forces, as prophesied in Daniel 11:24, 38-39. Number 6. History explains his dividing of the land for gain. For the feudal system is a term used for the expression of the manner and which the chiefs who conquered by the aid of their armies and settled in the conquered country divided the land among their followers, and the liabilities and privileges growing out of this division, when the chief or king saw the whole undivided territory on the one hand and the body of his followers wishing to settle it on the other, the question naturally arose: how should he divide it? The unsettled state of the world was to be considered if he divided it among his people without the preserving of a warlike attitude. They would become the prey of some of the armed hordes still moving in the search of the settlement. The leader, therefore, after retaining what he chose, gave out the land and a large portion unto his principal captain on the condition of their doing homage unto him, paying a certain sum of the money and appearing in the field with a certain number of the retainers whenever he called for their aid. These chief officers, after keeping what they desired for their own use, divided the remainder of the land assigned them unto their own slavery, who worked as much as many and soldiers to them as they were to the king. For the conquered inhabitants who remained became slaves and were transferable with the land. These kings rose by their own prowess, but on the settling with their nation, the monarchy was generally first elected in their family, then a hereditary. Universal History, 200. Number 7, the second regime of the South, which is defeats the fourth regime of the North. And he shall stir up his power and his courage against the king of the South with a great army. And the king of the South shall be stirred up to battle with a very great and mighty army. But he shall not stand, but he shall forecast devices against him. They that feed every portion of his meat shall destroy him, and his army shall overflow, and many shall fall down slain. Then shall he return into his land with the great riches, and his heart shall be against the holy covenant. And he shall do exploits and return unto his own land. At the time appointed, he shall return and come toward the South. But it shall not be as the former or as the latter. For the ships of the Chittim shall come against him, therefore he shall be aggrieved and return and have indignation against the holy covenant. So shall he do. He shall even return and have intelligence with them that forsake the holy covenant. Daniel 11:25-26, 28-30. We have already seen from the prophecy, also from the history, that the first regime of the South, the Ptolemaic, was overthrown by the third regime of the North, that of the pagan Rome. And as the pagan Rome never waged war against any other power of the South, two points stand out clearly first. Following the Ptolemaic regime, another king of the South must have arisen and second the war against this king of the South was waged by the regime subsequent unto the pagan Rome, that of the Christianized Rome. The fourth regime of the North has stirred up the power and his courage against the king of the South. For the only regime that has risen from the South since the Ptolemaic dynasty went down, and that has ruled Egypt and Palestine, is that of the Moors, a Mohammedan Arabic speaking race of the mixed descent, forming part of the population of the Barbary and deriving their name from the Mali, the ancient inhabitants of the Mauritania, whose pure lineal descendants are, however, the Amazigh, a branch of the Berbers. The modern Moors have sprung from a union of the ancient inhabitants of this region with their Arab conquerors, who appeared in the 7th century as the Mohammedan conquerors of the Visigoths in Spain, 711 to 713, came from North Africa. The name Moor was also applied unto them by the Spanish chroniclers. And in that connection is is synonymous with the Arab and Saracen. These Moors pushed northward into France until they were repulsed by the Charles Martel at the Great Battle of the Tours in 732, after which they practically restricted themselves to Spain, south of the Ebro and the Sierra Guadarrama. For the expelled Moors, the settling in the north of Africa, found a city from which to harass the Spanish coast, and finally developed into the powerful states of the Barbary, whose desperados or desperation or depredations, let's do that again, and finally developed into the piratical states of the Barbary, whose depredations were a source of irritation to the civilized Christian powers, even till well into the present century. 20th Century Encyclopedia, Volume 6, page 24. For the conflicts between the South and the North following the Greco-Roman wars were between the Mohammedans and the Christians at that time. And when they said Christians here, Peter Heller was talking about the Catholics. The Catholics are the ones that created the Mohammedans. The Catholic Pope in the 7th century A.D. created the Mohammed and sent him on a mission to organize a nation of people that the Catholic Church could hire to go and overthrow Jerusalem. That's who these Mohammedans were. And they're apostolic and typical. And at that time, therefore, while the title King of the North applies to the rulers of the Christianized Rome, the time, or the title King of the South applies unto the Mohammedan rulers, in other words, those Arabs. Inasmuch as the Saracens, Moors, Arabs, and Turks, the Muslims, are the successors of the Mohammedan Empire, and the different regimes we hear in, for the sake of the brevity, use the name Mohammedan for all, as if they were the one regime. For these prophetically and historically chronicle events make it impossible to misapply the title, or to misconstrue the powers Moreover, the verse is Dan 11:25-26, 28-30, upon which we are now. Concentrating credit victory to the king of the south, and history shows that at the exact time the scripture points out that the Mohammedans arose from the Africa and also invaded the Christian nation, or in other words, the Catholic nation north of the Mediterranean. That would be Turkey, because it would be one of those Catholic nations. Then it was that Rome lost Egypt and Palestine. For these verses, the personal pronoun of the two antagonists, kings of the south and the king of the north, are not traceable by the grammatical law, but only by the logic of the event. And he, as a king of the north, shall stir up his power and his courage against the king of the south with a great army, and the king of the south shall be stirred up to battle with the very great and mighty army. But he, the king of the north, shall not stand, for they shall forecast device against them. Yea, they that feed of the portion of his meat, the meat of the king of the north, shall destroy him, the king of the north, and his king of the south army shall overflow, and many shall fall down slain. Then, being defeated, shall he, the king of the north, return into his land with the great riches, and his heart shall be against the holy covenant. And he, as the king of the north, shall do exploits and return unto his own land. At the time appointed, he shall return and come forward of the south, but it shall not be as the former or as the latter. Daniel 11:25-26, 28-29. The he pronoun of Daniel 11:28 returns unto his land with the great riches, did not take them as booty from the king of the south, whose army overflowed him and caused many to fall down slain, not to stand. Daniel 11:26. But he must have received them from the converts to his religion, those who ate the portion of his meat, Daniel 11:26, his servants, and who later destroys him, were at the outset as the Protestants, as the he of Daniel 11:25 returns at the appointed time and comes toward the south. He is therefore the king of the north, going down for another battle. These are the particulars which history confirms, and thus it is seen that the bracketed identification of the pronouns is correct, for the western incursion of the Mohammedans began in 639 A.D. when they invaded the country, and Egypt became a Mohammedan province. a new student reference book. They're following the Ptolemies, the Mohammedans, whose rule was a sect that southern regime came into the title of King of the South. By 814 A.D., Rome, as the King of the North, had already ceded Egypt and Palestine to the Mohammedans, to the King of the South, conscience dominating Christianity from the North, and conscience dominating Mohammedans from the South, have ever since been in the territorial and the religious conflict, and whichever one takes a slice of the other's dominion, he forced upon penalty of the death for the nonconformity his religious beliefs upon his captives. Number 8, both spoke lies, and both these kings' hearts shall be to do mischief, and they shall speak lies at one table. But it shall not prosper, for yet the end shall be at the time appointed. Daniel 11:27. For the one table at which both kings speak is figuratively, that is, ecclesiastical Rome declared to their captives that the Roman religion was foreshadowed by the angel Gabriel's announcement to Mary that she was to hear to bear a son, the Savior of the world. Likewise, Mohammedanism next declared to the same people at the same table, when they became their captives, that the angel Gabriel appeared to Mohammed and gave him the religion which all the people of the earth must have. Though Rome's declaration as to just what Gabriel said unto Mary is founded the fact that the Rome's actual religion, merely created with the Christianity, was not the religion of the one whose birth Gabriel forespoke. As to the Mohammed receiving of his religion from the Gabriel, he never did. Thus, both the Mohammedanized Pasha, and the Christianized Lord were speaking lies at one table, the people's table. But these shall not prosper, declares the angel, for yet the end shall be at the time appointed. And that is, their false religions will come to an end at an appointed time. They will not endure forever. Okay, we've got to pause here.